You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In his latest book, The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency, Harvard Law School professor Randall Kennedy discusses the complexities and contradictions of America's relationship with its first African-American president and the ways in which race affects Barack Obama's leadership and the discourse that surrounds him. The book is published by Pantheon. I'm very pleased to welcome Professor Kennedy to our show today. Hello.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You begin your book by saying that everything about Barack Obama is interpreted through the prism of race. Everything? Unemployment, health care, the debt ceiling?
Sure. I'll stick by that statement. Everything. So, for instance, with respect to his health care reform legislation, there were some, I think, of Rush Limbaugh, who said that this was just reparations disguised. When there was the dispute about the police officer who arrested my colleague, Henry Louis Gates Jr., the president said, well, in his view, the police officer had acted stupidly. He didn't say that the police officer had acted in a racially discriminatory way. He said the police officer seems to have acted stupidly. Glenn Beck accused the president of racism by that remark. When Barack Obama's skin color has been remarked upon by Harry Reid, the way he speaks has been racialized. Yeah, everything about the president has been seen through a racial lens by detractors and supporters alike.
So how much do you think the color of his skin affects the decisions he makes or feels he's able to make as president?
No, I think it's very important in his calculations. For instance, he stays away from racial issues to the extent that he can. Sometimes he has to confront them, but he would prefer not to talk about race. Why? Because racial talk is a loser for him, and one of the reasons it's a loser for him is because he's black. He makes a studied effort to accentuate his calmness. Why? Well, there's the stereotype of the angry black man that hovers over him. I think with respect to many things, racial and non-racial, the burden of his race is part of his calculus.
But it didn't really come up during the election campaign against John McCain, at least not in any of the candidate's speech. Of course, it came up with the voters quite a bit.
Well, I mean, the way in which Barack Obama conducted his presidency, race certainly had a large factor in that. One thinks, for instance, about the most perilous moment in his candidacy, the whole controversy with Reverend Wright, and one of the most celebrated of Barack Obama's speeches, the More Perfect Union speech. That was all about race.
Considered a turning point in his campaign.
Absolutely. He didn't want to make the speech, but he had to make the speech. And why was that speech especially important? Because, race is an especially volatile issue.
Well, you also mentioned his response to when Minister Louis Farrakhan supported his candidacy. What happened there?
Well, when Louis Farrakhan supported his candidacy, there were journalists who essentially demanded that Barack Obama renounce Louis Farrakhan, and Barack Obama obliged. With respect to how he presented himself, so there were times during the election where Barack Obama made it very clear over and over to the electorate. He had a white mother. He was raised by white people. He wasn't ashamed of that at all. In fact, I think he wanted to make it clear. I think for some people, for some voters, their anxieties about his blackness were assuaged. On the other hand, there were some other voters who were anxious about, is Barack Obama really black enough? And for those voters, Barack Obama made a point of showing his wife, Michelle Robinson Obama, to assuage their anxieties about his blackness. She could validate his blackness. So race has been a presence with Barack Obama ever since he's been in big time politics.
And you've said there really are two Barack Obamas.
At least two. There are probably more, but at least two. And by the way, I don't say that. I don't say that.
Well, he has no choice in the matter, does he?
I'm sorry?
Does he have much of a choice in this matter?
I think so. Sure.
What would be an alternative approach?
Well, I mean, the most important choice that he made in terms of racial politics was to call himself black. He had a choice. He could have called himself multiracial. He didn't.
As Tiger Woods insisted.
As Tiger Woods and others. Not just, I mean, there are thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people who insist upon calling themselves, multiracial or something else. He could have. His mother's white. His father's black. He didn't have to call himself black or African American, but he did. And that was an important choice that he made.
Aren't many people colorblind when it comes to politics, Republicans or Democrats, no matter who the candidate is?
Oh, I think there's some. Sure, there's a huge country, a lot of people.
Do you think that everybody who voted for him was voting for him thinking that he was a black man?
Or I think
were they
a
voting
lot.
For him because he was the candidate of the Democrats and people were unhappy with George Bush?
Oh, people vote for all lots of reasons, always. I mean, most people, it's the unusual voter who simply has one thing in mind. People, have all sorts of things in mind. They have religious beliefs in mind. They have partisanship beliefs in mind. They have ideological beliefs in mind. There are all sorts of things. Is race one of the ingredients that was in the mind of people voting for or not voting for him? The answer is yes.
My guest is Randall Kennedy, the Michael R. Klein Professor of Law at Harvard Law School. His latest book is called The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. It's published by Pantheon. Well, he's in an office that's been occupied by many slaveholders. Does race factor in the way he talks about the founders and other parts of America's national historical narrative?
He does. A couple of weeks ago, when there was the great controversy over the debt ceiling. He talked about compromise. And in fact, it was very interesting. And when he talked about compromise, he says, listen, compromise has been central to America, American history. Where would we be without compromise? It was compromise over slavery. Now, one thing I thought was interesting about that was he seemed to be actually lauding compromise.
It did keep slavery in place in this country for nearly 100 years.
It certainly did. I mean, I think that abolitionists would have been cocking their eye at that. How ironic that the nation's first black president seemed to have been lauding, let's say, Henry Clay and eschewing, William Lloyd Garrison. So, yeah, he's aware of these sorts of things. I thought that was really ironic.
How conscious do you think he was of that, implications?
He is a thoughtful and very well-educated person. I would love to have a conversation with him.
Well, he went to your
that.
Law school.
He did. He went to my law school, and by all reports, he was a very fine student.
Were you surprised by Michelle Bachmann's claims that the Founding Fathers were all opposed to slavery? I bring that up only because it suggests that many Americans are still confused about that history.
No, that does not surprise me at all, because there is widespread ignorance about American history, particularly America's racial history.
Is race a factor in others' comparisons between Obama and past presidents? For a while, they compared him to Abraham Lincoln.
I guess race is, omnipresent, for good and for bad. But when you say Barack Obama, I mean, if you were going to do a Rorschach test, Barack Obama, I'd say, for most people, blackness is going to be a close association.
You begin your book with a chapter called The Obama Inaugural. Did you attend it?
I did.
How did you feel at the time?
It was, a very emotional moment. I had never been to an inauguration, even though I grew up in Washington, D.C. In fact, not only had I never been, but I mean, I didn't even feel like I never felt called upon to go to an inauguration.
Were you invited to any previous ones?
No, I was never invited to a previous one. I was invited to this one. Michelle Obama had been a student. She was in one of my classes. In fact, for a brief time, she was one of my research assistants. And I think it was through her good offices that I got an invitation to the inaugural. And I went. I took my son, my oldest son, and it was a memorable experience for me. And I tried in that first chapter of the book to capture the emotions that I felt.
Well, you say in the book that recalling the post-election euphoria can be painful and embarrassing. Does the election seem less significant now than it did in 2008?
It doesn't seem less significant. It was an extraordinary moment in American life. I think that there were some people, and I would say me too, who were, you know, caught up a bit, maybe had a certain naivete about the possibilities for transformation. But it was an extraordinary moment. I still view it as an extraordinary moment.
The opposition to the president isn't just from whites, although conservative whites do make up the overwhelming majority of the opponents. One of the Republicans running for president, Herman Cain, claims to be the only real black candidate in the race.
Well, that's not unusual. I mean, after all, when there was a black candidate who was arrayed against Barack Obama, Alan Keyes, when Barack Obama ran for to be the senator, United States senator from Illinois, and Alan Keyes claimed to be the only black candidate in that race too. So this is not unusual. And furthermore, you know, yes, there are when Barack Obama ran for the White House, there were black people on the right who opposed him. There were black people, some on the left, who opposed him.
Well, Thomas Sowell and Shelby Steele on the right.
That's right.
What are their problems with him?
Well, I mean, he's
a Democrat.
He's not conservative. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
And Juan Williams?
Juan Williams,
a more complicated case?
Much more complicated case, but he was extremely critical of Obama during the election campaign. I mean, black America is varied, just like other sections of America.
Well, there were some people who supported Hillary Clinton because they had good connections with Bill Clinton.
Absolutely.
And it didn't matter whether Barack Obama was black or white. They were supporters of the Clintons.
True, initially. I mean, when at the beginning of the campaign, many of the leading and most vocal black elected officials were clearly in the Hillary Clinton camp. When Barack Obama, however, showed that he had a realistic chance of winning the nomination, blacks bolted for Barack Obama, and black elected officials followed suit very quickly.
Randall Kennedy is the Michael R. Klein Professor of Law at Harvard Law School. He was a Rhodes Scholar and former clerk to Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, and he's the author of Race, Crime, and the Law, which was a winner of the Robert F. Kennedy Book Award. Also, Interracial Intimacy, Sex, Marriage, Identity, and Adoption, Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word, and Sellout, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. His latest is called The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency, published by Pantheon. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Professor Randall Kennedy of Harvard. His latest book, The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency, published by Pantheon. Is it difficult when discussing his opponents to determine where race factors in and where it doesn't? How do you parse those who oppose, say, his foreign policy or the way he handled the debt ceiling negotiations, and those who will oppose him regardless of what he might do?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, just suppose somebody says, you know, race has nothing to do with it. I'm opposing him on ideological grounds. Well, that may very well be. There are lots of reasons why people oppose Barack Obama on non-racial grounds. But, you know, one must make inferences. So, and it's very difficult, and it's somewhat speculative. Sometimes it's the case that people are just out and out lying. Sometimes it's the case that people are using other reasons as pretext for racial bias. They know that it's, you know, people frown on racial bias, so they don't want to use racial bias as an explanation for their opposition. So they come up with something else. Maybe they say the man is a Muslim, as if that's a legitimate reason for being against him, but they feel comfortable saying that, or they say something else.
Or that he comes from Kenya and he has colonial politics,
or
Gingrich suggests.
He has colonial politics, or he wasn't born in this country. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why people, you know, use pretext. And then, and I think this is an important one, we hide things from ourselves. So there's some people who, in all sincerity, give an explanation. They, if you put them under truth serum, you would find out that they believe that they're telling the truth. No, race has nothing to do with it. But in fact, race does have something to do with it. The fact of the matter is we hide things from ourselves.
What about when a leading black intellectual like Cornel West criticizes him? How much do you think race is a factor in his thinking?
Well, I mean, with respect to Cornel West...
Another colleague
and friend. He makes no bones about it. Race is a factor in his thinking. He believes that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, having been a beneficiary of the civil rights movement, should be especially keen to advance a progressive agenda that will help poor people in general, but poor black people in particular.
And he and Tavis Smiley have been talking about how the president, as they see it, has ignored the poor in favor of the wealthy and powerful. He also, Cornell, wrote an article for the New York Times, published just yesterday, Dr. King Weeps from His Grave. And he is not alone in thinking that Obama's been too timid on race-related political subjects. You mention specifically his stance on affirmative action.
Yes, there are a couple of things. Number one, again, there are and there have always been black critics of the president from various ideological positions, and including the left. It should be noted, though, that the harsh critics of Barack Obama in the black community, I'd say, are rather marginal. The great mass of black Americans have been enthusiastic supporters of Barack Obama, and they are enthusiastic supporters now, even though they're hurting, even though, you know, they are sympathetic to the criticisms that are made, but they are still very strong supporters of the president.
But they were very strong supporters of Bill Clinton, although it was pointed out that some of the things he supported actually work to the detriment of blacks.
Absolutely, and that's because a lot of these voters, it seems to me, have a realistic understanding of electoral politics in the United States. They recognize that the president of the United States can't do whatever he wants to do, that the president is often in competition with other political actors, that his power is limited, and that one always has to ask, compared to what? So you might not like what this president is doing. Okay, fine. You know, what does he face? What special dilemmas does he face? What can he accomplish and still maintain power, electoral power?
Well, a number of people have been concerned about the way he starts a discussion. Instead of saying, I'm going to hold firm to this, he says, I'm ready to compromise before he's even completely laid out his position, which of course invites anybody who is taking an opposite position to grab as much of the territory as possible.
I think that's a good criticism of him. I think he should be held accountable to that political deficiency. Again, I'm though I support Barack Obama, I think that people ought to look at any person with power and influence, you know, with a skeptical lens. And that goes for Barack Obama as well. But recognize, again, that he is an electoral politician who has to be keenly attentive to the discipline of electoral politics.
Is he also an anomaly? After all, African Americans are still underrepresented in American politics. There have been only 3 black senators and 2 black governors elected in America's history.
Absolutely, he's an anomaly. That's why when the night that he was elected, there were people going around asking, you know, am I in a dream? That's why people were saying, you know, I didn't believe I would live to see the day. He is an anomaly. And one of the reasons...
And then they asked if we are in a post-racial society.
There were some who asked that. I think, actually, that, you know, that was a naive notion. I mean, you know, race deeply embedded in American society. We still live in a racially hierarchical society. The election of Barack Obama, though an important, you know, mirror of racial change, was not going to wipe away America's racial history all in one blow.
We mentioned earlier that he has, in fact, you have 2 separate chapters about how Obama interacts with white and black Americans, and you said there were more than 2 Barack Obamas. Are the messages that he sends to those different communities all contradictory?
They're not contradictory. You know, are they sometimes in tension with one another? Yes. I mean, you know, to white audiences, he is saying over and over again, you know, you don't have to worry about me. I am not angry with you. I am not an angry black man. I do not bear racial resentments. I'm not going to impose reparations. Relax. That's, you know, I know white people. I love white people. I, you know, my mother was white. I was, you know, I grew up around white people. I mean, that's, you know, to the white audience. He speaks a certain way. He holds himself in a certain way with that audience. With black
audience. And that audience was shocked that he went to Reverend Wright's church.
And that audience was shocked, absolutely. They were, first of all, they didn't, you know, a lot of them had no idea that they were black ministers who spoke the way Reverend Wright spoke.
And everybody in the black community knows somebody who speaks that way.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I had white friends that, you know, came up to me and asked, gosh, I mean, can you believe what that minister said? And, you know, I said, are you kidding? You could go to 100 black churches all across the United States and hear something like that any Sunday. Come on. But it showed a real ignorance about, you know, a certain sector of American life. With black audiences, you know, Barack Obama, again, had to allay certain anxieties. He, you know, would change his approach, change his diction a little bit. And say, listen, I know that some of you are a little bit concerned about me, but, you know, again, relax. I might not be able to state straightforwardly what you want me to hear, but, you know, take a look at my signals. You'll know where I'm coming from. Sure. I mean, again, that was not... I mean, it was different insofar as he was a black politician, but politicians do that in other contexts all the time.
My guest is Randall Kennedy. His latest book, The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency, is published by Pantheon. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. One of the things that makes him remarkable is the sheer number of white supporters he's managed to get behind him.
That's true, although it should be remembered that Barack Obama did not win the majority of the white electorate in 2008. He won enough white votes to prevail, but if it had just been white people voting, John McCain would be president of the United States and Sarah Palin would be vice president of the United States right now.
And that was despite the fact that many people had misgivings about Sarah Palin, for example.
That's right. It didn't
seem to matter to them?
Well, I think that the fact that Obama did not win the majority of the white vote is a telling fact insofar as in 2008, he had everything going for him.
But what about previous Democrats running for the presidency? Don't most white voters, at least in large swaths of the country, vote Republican no matter what these days?
True. In presidential elections.
George Bush probably got the great majority of white voters.
He certainly did. He certainly did. In presidential politics in particular, most blacks and people of color, other people of color, go Democratic. Most whites go Republican. Still, this was an unusual election. Everything was pushing in Barack Obama's direction that he would not win the majority of the white vote under these circumstances. It seems to me was telling.
Let's talk a bit about the Supreme Court. You know something about the court. How did race factor in the discussion of Sonia Sotomayor's nomination to the Supreme Court?
Well, race was all over the discussion. The president did not make a lot of her being the first Latina nominated for the court. And he certainly did not say what Ronald Reagan said. You know, when Ronald Reagan ran for president, he said that if he became president, he would, if there was a vacancy, he would put a woman on the Supreme Court. Barack Obama said nothing of the sort. And when he did have a chance to fill a vacancy, he noted Sonia Sotomayor's sort of up from the barrio trajectory, but he didn't make a whole lot.
In fact, he suggested it was a non-political decision.
He did. And of course, it would be naive to credit that. The fact that she is a Democrat, the fact that she is a Democrat, sort of center liberal leaning sort of person, the fact that she's a Latina, all of that, of course, factored into his calculation, factored into his nominating.
George Bush openly talked about preferring conservative justice. Why couldn't Obama have said, well, I would prefer to have a liberal on the court, especially since the court has moved very much to the right?
I wish that he had, and on this one, I'm critical of the president. It seems to me that there are occasions on which he needlessly cedes ideological ground to his ideological adversaries. When he introduced Sonia Sotomayor, he said, one of the reasons why he wanted to nominate her was because he was looking for people who would apply the law and not make the law. That is one of the misleading talking points of people on the right. Why he would want to repeat this, and I'm quite certain that he doesn't believe it, but why he would want to even repeat that is beyond me, and in my book, I'm very critical of him for saying that.
It's interesting that race was a much bigger factor when Clarence Thomas was nominated to the Supreme Court.
Well, with respect to Sonia Sotomayor, it became a big issue. Remember her wise Latina remark? Mm-hmm. Remember the whole question? There were some people who questioned whether she had the intellectual stature to be on the court. Of course, that was, in my view, an absolutely ridiculous claim. She was a outstanding student at Princeton. She was an outstanding student at Yale Law School. She had been a United States District Court judge, a United States Court of Appeals judge. I say in my book that her record was fully as impressive as the record, frankly, of anybody on the court. But she did have to suffer people making claims that challenged her competency, challenged her standing to be on the court.
Your last chapter is called Obama and the Future of American Race Relations. when JFK became president, it broke that whole thing about whether a Catholic could be president. Ronald Reagan was the first divorced president. Do you think this changes things as far as African Americans are concerned, or does it, if anything, lead to reluctance to hire to elect another black president in the near future?
No, I think that the election of Obama did it has made a psychological difference, and in fact, I think that's going to be the big legacy. I don't anticipate any transformative policies coming from President Obama,
even though it's likely he'll be reelected.
I think he'll be reelected, but frankly, whether he's reelected or not, his election has changed things irrevocably in the United States. It has changed the outlook of people of color. It has changed the outlook of whites. It's changed the outlook of virtually all Americans.
Randall Kennedy is the Michael R. Klein Professor of Law at Harvard Law School. His latest book is called The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. It is published by Pantheon. Thank you so much for being on our show. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thanks again for having me on.